Welcome to the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. My name is Paul, and I will be your host. Thanks for joining us as we are beginning season two. Last month was our first episode in this conversation style format where we are going less interview-based, more conversation-based with Pastor Darren and Pastor Simon joining us on this conversation. Hey, I know that every podcast asks you to do this, but it would be really helpful if you could rate and review us on the podcast app that you're listening on. That really does help people find the content better. We're going to dive into our conversation with Pastor Darren again today. He's talking about some of the influences that have shaped his ministry and some of the mentors that he's had. And he also talks a lot about what God has been teaching him lately about his soul, some of the experiences he's had, some of the things he's learned about himself through the time that he's spent with God. And so it's going to be really important to understand this and see what God has done in his life and how it's shaping his ministry and changing Pastor Darren. And you'll really get to know Pastor Darren better by hearing this podcast and just hearing from his heart what God is doing in his life. So let's begin this episode of the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. Do you think that's a generational thing, that unintentional, come walk alongside of me type of mentoring? I know that even in my ministry journey, those that I have learned from have kind of adapted. Up until you've been very intentional, but the other leaders that I've worked with have been very unintentional. Some of them haven't been good at it, but some of them have been unintentionally good at it. Like they're the, anytime you can come sit in my office, we can talk ministry, we can go for coffee, you can come fishing with me, we'll talk right. about, you know, all those type of things. And they're just a wealth of information, but you're always making that withdrawal from their wisdom bank account. Right. That there's never a kind of a dialogue. So is that a generational thing, or is that I know that growing up, even being taught in Bible school, we didn't talk about intentional leadership stuff like they do now.
No, nor did I. I don't know, Simon, have you heard any stuff
You're one step younger.
You're a regent. You're in Bible college.
Yeah, in my generation, we're going hard into the leadership thing. Yeah. Like they're drilling that into us. That it is vital, and you cannot survive in pastoral ministry without understanding this leadership thing.
Yeah. See, when I was in Bible college, there was no talk of leadership. There was no course on leadership. Mm-hmm. John Maxwell, I'd never heard of him.
Right.
But actually, when I was pastoring in Cambridge, and that was my first church as a lead pastor, a friend of mine, who was a chiropractor, just one day randomly handed me a John Maxwell tape, Enjoy Life mm-hmm. Club tape. And he said, "Hey, Darren, I think you'd like this guy. Listen to this." I listened to it and I thought, "Oh my goodness, this is gold." Mm-hmm. And I became an Enjoy Life Club member for 10 years. And that radically changed my whole philosophy of ministry. And I got introduced through another guy, a church growth specialist, to Bill Hybels, mm-hmm. who radically impacted my life as mm-hmm. well with leadership principles. So I began, and this friend of mine said, "Darren, study Moses." Mm-hmm. He says, "Moses is probably the greatest leader apart from Christ in the Bible. If you think of what he had to do, he had to mm-hmm. lead this nation and mm-hmm. so on." So I began to study Moses. Just look through the Old Testament, his life, and literally I had a binder, and I lost it, but I had a binder of leadership principles from Moses' life as I just studied his life. Mm-hmm. So that stuff, I came later. It's not something I had been taught initially.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up knowing that Maxwell was the grandfather of like bringing business leadership principles into the church,
or even just the thought of intentionally talking about it, right?
Yeah, and the genius of Maxwell is he didn't just go to the business world and then say, "Oh, I'll translate this to church." He went to the scripture and pulled like these leadership principles and said, "Hey, guys, pay attention to this."
Yes. And now he's taking biblical leadership principles to the business world.
That's right.
So then, are we in agreement that unintentional mentoring style maybe isn't the best way forward? Now that we're talking about it, now that we're talking about being intentional with leadership, even if you're not a sit down, let's go through 3 steps to personal growth or 5 steps to mental health or whatever, we can say that to be intentional about passing on the things that you know is of utmost importance as a leader.
To me, it's 2 birds, 2 wings of the same bird.
Okay.
And so, because I get uptight when I think of, I have to mentor people, because I'm mm-hmm. thinking,
sure.
Yeah, what do I do? Do I have to then have a book and a course?
Yeah.
And that feels forced.
Yep.
But if you just leave it to the relational thing, then it can get lazy, mm-hmm. and you can think, well, it's just happening because we drove to the mall together. Therefore, I mentored them. Well, no, you know. So, but it's a both and kind mm-hmm. of a thing. Right. I think you need to have an intentional pathway. Like you said a few moments ago, before we started recording, you need a map to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think that's true when it comes to mentoring.
Sure.
You do need a roadmap, but then you have to have those conversations along that roadmap.
Right. Yeah. And I guess even in, we understand that maybe in a family context, right? Like there are certain things you want to teach your children.
That's right.
There are certain opportunities that you're with your children where the chance to teach them what is the right thing to do arises, right?
Yeah.
And so you don't only teach them right things in those opportunities. You know that there's times that you need to sit down and teach your kids yeah. about the birds and the bees, or you need to teach them about what it means to be a Christ follower, or what it means, you know, these important
yeah.
life moments.
Recognize the moments when, the classic thing, this is a teaching moment. Mm-hmm. Like I can remember an example with Bob Argue. One of my first, if not my first sermon preaching for him, it was a Sunday night and I preached a sermon and made some joke about Jan and cooking or whatever. So the following Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever, him and I were about to go for lunch. And I can still take you to the place in the church where he had this conversation. You got to know him. He had a soft heart. And so we're checking the front door to make sure they're locked before we walked out the back door to walk across the grass to the mall to get our lunch. And he stops. He says, "Dear Heart," that's what he used to call me, "Dear Heart." He says, "Dear Heart, I need to say something." And his eyes are welling up with tears. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what am I getting fired? What happened? And he says, he preached a sermon Sunday night. I said, yeah. He says, it was a really good sermon. It's good. I said, oh, thank you, Pastor. He says, and now you made a joke about Jan's cooking. Now, Jan and I were just married. He said, you made a joke about her cooking. He says, it was a funny joke, guaranteed laugh. And he said, but he says, listen, don't do that. He said, your wife is going to be a pastor's wife, and she is going to be the target for a lot of criticism and in a lot of people's gun sights. He said, you should always build her up, never tear her down from the pulpit. And to this day, that echoes in my mind. Whenever you hear me tell a joke with Jan's in the joke, she's the smart person and I'm the stupid person in the joke. Mm-hmm. And that's because Bob Argue taught me that at that moment. So did he wake up that morning and think, well, okay, now what are we going to teach Darren? No, it was just a situational thing, and he waited for his moment and he shared, and I received it because I knew he loved me and he cared about me.
Wow. A powerful relationship and that reflects on and helps me reflect and even process the powerful relationships I've had as mentors.
Yeah.
Darren, I had a question here that I'm going to kind of change on the fly. We talked about like negative and positive memories that you have during your journey in ministry, but maybe a better question is like, for sure, like you've been pastoring 35
years.
Since
1985,
whatever that is. Yeah. 35, 36 years. You've had highs and lows, right?
Yeah.
Probably many, right? Mm-hmm. Many highs, many lows. Great things that have happened. Great Sundays that you've come home from preaching and felt like you really made a difference.
Yep.
And there's probably times you've come home from Sundays or meetings and felt like, I don't know if this is good, right?
I don't know if I can do this.
How do you process those things? Because how do you not get too excited when things are going great? How do you not get too low or too kind of in your own head or too wrapped up in the moment when things are low?
I can honestly say, looking back, I have never struggled with the highs.
Okay.
I've struggled more with the lows. I've never struggled with the highs because it's my nature that I don't dwell on those for two reasons. One is I'm always planning way ahead. So today was a great day, but tomorrow, now I've got to go write another sermon.
I've heard you say you're only as good as your last sermon.
Yes, exactly. and so I don't literally sit and think, I've arrived, this is it. Mm-hmm. And I'm literally thinking, oh, but now we got it. Now what's next? What's next on the agenda? So I'm always looking way ahead. Plus, at an unhealthy level, this is part of what I learned in this last little while, I always deep down had a negative self-image. Mm. So whatever happened, yeah, but God still wasn't really pleased.
Right.
And yeah, but I'm still an idiot. Mm-hmm. So I'm just fooling people, mm-hmm. you know. The lows I would wrestle with because, just because if maybe the difficult moment in your mind underlined what you deeply thought about yourself. Yeah, okay. See, you really are terrible, mm-hmm. or you really maybe aren't called, mm-hmm. or maybe you're really not cut out for this. Mm-hmm. Or just the sense of failure would be very real. Mm-hmm. Now, what would help me in those moments is my thinking way ahead. So it's almost like I was on a plane the other day and it was about a 4-hour flight and I saw, Gone with the Wind. It's an option. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's 3.5 hours or something. I'll watch that. That'll take up most of the flight. And so at the end, I almost felt like her where, what's her last phrase in that movie? Tomorrow is another day. You know, I thought, yeah, that's kind of how I've lived my life. Like, okay, yeah, the world's burning down around me, but tomorrow is another day. Right. So that always would help me, even in the depths, was deep down, I would come back to it. I am called. Mm-hmm. And I've got tomorrow, and I've got tomorrow's agenda, and I'm just going to pick up and keep moving.
So somewhere right now, there's a pastor listening to this mm-hmm. who understands the word called.
Yeah.
He has used it to describe himself before. May not feel that he is completely sold out to that call right now.
Yeah.
He's wavering. Rather than speak a encouraging word to them, which wouldn't be a bad thing, but what is your understanding when you say that word calling?
Yeah.
Because I know that it has been something that I feel like has held me to keep plowing the field in places where maybe my emotions or my circumstances said to leave. Tell me what that means when you say I'm called.
At its root, it simply means, and it's not just for pastors, whatever, it means I am presently doing what I think I'm supposed to be doing. Mm. So it's literally an attitude of obedience that to the best of my understanding, to the best of my knowledge right now, I am not in rebellion. Mm-hmm. So wherever I am right now is where I honestly think I've been led to be and I'm supposed to be. Now, that could change tomorrow.
Right.
But at this moment, I am where I'm supposed to be and I rest in that. And I had to come back to that this past season where I had to do some self-reflection in my life and ministry. I'm big on the big idea, right? Mm-hmm. We do a big idea in our sermons here. So I summarized the big idea of my leave of absence. When I summarized it all to our board, I said, this is what I learned. When it comes to God and my whole learnings is I had to say, okay, God, you know me and you love me. I choose to believe you and to trust you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. I had to come down to this in my life. I believe that you know me and you actually love me. You know everything about me, and you love me. And here's my side of the equation. I believe you when you say you love me, mm-hmm. and I choose to trust you.
It seems like such a foundational or basic statement to make.
Yeah.
But if you can honestly make that from the depth and the root of who you are, it's life transformational.
It is. And I realized at my core, I didn't believe it.
Wow.
I taught it. I believed it was true for others, but because of issues I had in my own life, I deep down subconsciously in my emotional level didn't think I was the outlier. It didn't really apply to me. It's a good word for everyone else. Mm-hmm. I believed it intellectually, but subconsciously I had to revisit that and confront myself with this and say, no, Darren, this applies to you.
As a young pastor, Darren, as someone who knows you and works alongside of you, hearing you say this, it impacts me. Hmm. It impacts me because there's a lot of young pastors that may be listening to something like this, knowing who you are, your influence within the PAOC, within Vancouver, within our churches, knowing that a guy at your level didn't believe these basic foundational truths about who we are, what we're trying to get accomplished, what we're preaching. And knowing that you're wrestling through these things at your level, I'm going, well, maybe someone at my level could wrestle through these things, or someone at the next level could wrestle through these things, but not Darren Latham. And so it is so revealing to hear your vulnerability. Right. And this is a teaching moment for me. I'm learning.
See, I didn't even think I had a level. Right. So when I hear you say that, or even anyone say that, in my mind, for years, I would think, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Like, you're just blowing smoke or whatever. Like, I had no self-awareness or no self-image of me having a level.
Right.
My self-image deep down was not good.
Yeah, interesting. And you know what? Level might be a little unfair because I know that you would never think of yourself in that way, or you've never peacocked for position and anything like that. But there is a weight that you bring to conversations and in our fellowship of churches. Okay. And it brings a new level of respect and understanding hearing you walk through doubts and trying to bring clarity to what you feel God has called you to.
Yeah.
It's really helpful.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think it's important to understand that my wrestling was how it applied to me, not the truth of it.
Right.
And this, you know, to not to jump tracks, but part of my, you know, you've heard me speak publicly and privately, my whole learning of the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex and that whole thing. And that I discovered was in deep embedded in my subconscious was this idea that I'm not lovable and God can't really be trusted. Because, you know, intellectually I knew God knows everything. I knew the theology. God knows everything. You know, the psalmist, before words on my tongue, you know it completely. You search me, you know me. You know when I sit, when I rise. And that wasn't helping me deep down. Because if God knows me more than anybody else, then God must despise me more than anyone else.
So here's the interesting thing for me. You saying words like deep down you felt like you felt unlovable.
Right.
Deep down you felt like if people really knew me, they wouldn't like me. Yeah. I've sat across my desk from people who've said the same things to me, but they're not able to actually function in the world. They are so broken, right? You felt that way, and we're still preaching incredible sermons and leading our church.
Pretty high functioning.
That's the power of the internet.
and in lots of ways, we're someone that, you know, Simon and I for sure wanted to follow as a leader, right? Yeah. So how were you able to function? Like how are those two things able to coexist?
Because I was the outlier. So I was sharing a truth that was true. I believed it was true. I still believe it was true.
Yes.
I did believe it was true, but so this was all subconscious. Subconsciously, it just wasn't true for me. I was the one person in history. No, I know this is irrational.
Yeah, right.
I was the one person in history about whom this was not true.
Right.
That I was the exception. I was the one that Jesus talked about when he said, you know, you delivered people from demons, you did miracles, but I never knew you.
Right.
I was that person. Mm-hmm. Again, if you had asked me a year ago, do you think you're that person? No, I don't. If you ask me, do you think God loves you? Yes, of course he does. I would say that. But I'm saying in my heart of hearts, when I actually peeled back the emotion and peeled back the lies in my life, I had to confront this fact deep, deep, deep at my core. I didn't think I could trust God.
Wow.
And I didn't think I could trust him because I didn't think he really had my best interests at heart. And he didn't have my best interests at heart because he didn't love me. And he didn't love me because I had given reason for him not to love me.
Mm.
And so he wanted to love me. And yes, he saved me, but I was kind of like the black sheep of the family. Mm. I was kind of like the, yeah, okay, well, come because I said you could come so you can come. But I'm really not affectionate towards you. Again, hearing myself say all this doesn't make sense.
Right.
But it's what I felt.
We're going to pause it right there. And I don't know about you, but this has been really enriching to hear this stuff.
to hear from Pastor Darren's heart and to hear what God has been teaching him over these months and the things that God has been doing in his heart. And it's really impacted my heart as well. I know that you'll be blessed by coming back next month as we air the last of three parts of this conversation with Pastor Darren about the soul and about ministry and leadership. Thanks so much for joining us at the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. We do this podcast every month because we believe when it comes to leadership, that'll do, just won't do. We'll see you again next month.